Welcome, everyone, into Redacted on this Tuesday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
I had a button open. I was showing a little too much chest hair.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Too much cleavage there. Right. You got to button it up.
No one wants to see that on a guy.
You don't know.
Is there anybody watching that would want to see a man's chest hair? I actually don't even have any chest hair.
So. You are not, what's his name? Malcolm.
I don't know.
Oh, come on. Monica's boyfriend on Friends. Who are we
Magnum
thinking of?
Magnum P.I.?
Yes, the actor.
No, I'm not one of those guys that has like a tuft of
you
hair
guys,
sticking
please.
Out.
You guys, please.
Yes.
What's his name?
Magnum P.I.
What's the actor's name?
Tom Selleck.
Thank you.
Yes, I also don't have a mustache. Way to hit a home run.
If you were Tom Selleck, I would want to see your chest hair.
Okay. I'm going to grow a mustache and I'm going to...
I mean, I want to see your chest
yeah.
hair.
Yeah. There's nothing there. There's really nothing. It's like a little tiny patch. It's just like a whiff of hair. That's all it is. good evening, everyone. Welcome into the big show. We've got a jam-packed show for you here on this Tuesday night. Among the things we're going to talk about the EU sanctions, which are now in place even further on oil tonight. We're going to talk about how the EU is doing backflips over this, some major economic news on that. Oil prices going up, of course, as a result. Looking at inflation numbers out of Poland this afternoon, the United States gas prices are hitting record high, and President Biden speaking with Jerome Powell this afternoon. So he says his primary concern isn't tackling inflation in the United States.
Yet he also said in the Wall Street Journal that he's not going to get involved. Right, so I'm going to get involved without getting involved.
How do you
We're
going to
break that down.
I would like to try that at home.
I'm not sure. I try that every night when I put my kids to bed.
Right.
Getting involved without getting involved, it never works.
It's not going to happen.
All right. We're also going to talk about the next stage of the war in Ukraine. And we're going to try to break down this new release of a bit of the Mueller investigation and see what we can make of it.
I thought it was over. I thought that was done.
It is over. But you know it involved Ukraine and Russia. So it's not over because those things persist.
Right. And so a large portion of that document, I guess, is redacted. So we're going to go through.
Yes.
Natalie's going to try to make as much sense of it as she can. She spent like literally the whole afternoon knee deep in notes on the Mueller report and like pulling her hair out. So, yes.
So we need you to try and help us make sense of it because I can sort of come up with a timeline, figure out who's who. But we're missing something. I think we can all agree on that, right? It involves Russia, Ukraine. Now we're in this war. It involves American politicians. We're going to try and like put the pieces out Game of Thrones style. And you guys let us know.
Okay.
What the hell?
Yeah, what the hell? Also, we're going to talk about Justin Trudeau. And some people are saying, man, this guy is an absolute opportunist. Here's a Texas shooting and then Canada outlaws handguns. What's going on in Canada? Other people saying, hey, maybe that's a great idea because one of the leading causes of violence there is handgun-related violence in Canada. So where do you guys come down on that debate? But Justin Trudeau certainly stirring up a pot of controversy in Canada this afternoon. So we will talk about that.
Plus, the World Health Organization treaty continues to give itself a lot of amazing power. We're going to talk about whether or not we want that. Or if we're all going to move to Mars,
yeah, and
where they have no power.
And we have some breaking news sort of on this WHO treaty that happened last night. So we'll tell you what continent we could be thanking today for at least a partial pause in this. So a lot of moving pieces today. We've also been watching Julian Assange, waiting on that extradition decision. So there's a lot of things that we're keeping our eye on. But before we get into the big news, please, please, please. We learned how YouTube's algorithm works. If you're watching us on YouTube, okay, here's how it works. All you have to do is smash that like button, and then it pushes us out. More people get to see the show. So that's all it takes is 2 seconds. Just push that like button and subscribe to the channel. When you push that like button, though, it sends it out in the YouTube algorithm while we are live here doing this broadcast. And on Rumble, you can smash the Rumble button over there, and Rumble's great because, you know, it's all free speech over there. So the stuff that we don't get to publish on YouTube, we can publish over on Rumble. Our thanks to all of you for subscribing on whatever platform you're on, Facebook, Twitch, Rumble, YouTube, Twitter. I don't know if we're anywhere else yet.
Well, we're on a morning newsletter. Remember, we still have the newsletter. It's morninginvest.com. It comes to your inbox for free every morning. It is a lot of this news that you'll get here, And then a lot of sort of other just kind of conversational pieces. Like, I still cannot stop laughing about the story this morning about people who are fans of referees, not of sports teams. They go to sporting events.
Yeah.
They don't like either team. They are just fans of referees. And I kind of love it. So
it's like, okay, they don't like the sports, but they're just going to go and watch the refs.
They just make signs cheering on the refs like, good call.
Way to go.
Way to call that strike.
Way to go.
I love it.
You know what I should not have done is taken a hot bath before this show.
Because you can't stop sweating.
Now, it's so hot and sticky out, and now I'm sweating like an idiot. So I feel like a jackass right now, and I feel like a hot, sweaty jackass right now.
All right. So. Well, we know Clayton's got sweaty balls, so
yeah,
that's where he's coming from.
How many of you watching right now have sweaty balls? If you do, you've come to the right place. So welcome, welcome, welcome.
It's a requirement.
Yeah. David is still out. Philip is running the show along with Kevin. Grim is in the chat. We've got the whole team here from Redacted. Today's episode is brought to you by Storyworth. This is one of the best companies I've ever heard of. A few years ago, my dad was getting up there in age, and my wife found out about a company called Storyworth for Father's Day. She said, hey, this is a great gift for your dad. And what it does is Storyworth, basically, it's an online service that helps you and your dad, your father figure, connect through sharing stories and memories. And not just for dad, you can do it for anybody, but hey, it's Father's Day coming up, right? And it would preserve these things for years. And how it works is every week Storyworth emails your dad a thought-provoking question of your choice from a vast pool of possible options. Each unique prompt like asks a question you might not have ever thought to ask your dad, like, what is one of your fondest childhood memories? Have you ever been terrified of something in your life? What happened to make you, you know, something? And it could be really thought-provoking. Well, we got this from my dad, and he told a story about like going up to this creepy, like almost like haunted house with his friends, and they thought this house was haunted in Baltimore when he was growing up, and all of a sudden this like door creaks open and this old man walks out, and they freaked out and they jumped over the fence and like ripped their pants. And like, anyway, I wouldn't have known that story if it wasn't for Storyworth. And now my father's passed away, and I, you know, it's amazing to be able to go back and look at these, you know, keepsakes that Storyworth compiles. They put all of these questions and stories, including photos, into a beautiful keepsake book that the whole family can share for generations. So give all of the fathers in your life a meaningful gift that you can both cherish for years to come. Storyworth. Right now, for a limited time, save $10 on this too, on your first purchase, when you go to storyworth.com/redacted. Okay, here's how it is spelled out. Storyworth.com/redacted to save $10 on your first purchase. Storyworth.com/redacted. Let's talk about the very latest and the standing ovation, the jumping jacks that the European Union, Ursula von der Leyen, was doing this morning over new oil sanctions in the European Union, up to about 90%. We're going to stop up to 90% of oil coming from Russia.
Eventually.
And there's all these caveats with this, right? So let me just play. Let's play the soundbite from Ursula. And she's from Little Mermaid, isn't she, Ursula?
That is the villain's name. Okay. And this actual politician is not.
Oh, okay. Because she's
the
not.
Little Mermaid.
Okay. So, yeah, here's Ursula von der Leyen talking about the gas supplies and the halting of all these gas supplies coming from Russia.
I'm very glad that the leaders were able to agree in principle on the six sanctions package. This is very important. Thanks to this, Council should now be able to finalize a ban on almost 90% of all Russian oil imports by the end of the year. This is an important step forward.
Okay. So meanwhile, the Russia has seen like a 25% spike, an increase in oil going to India and other places. Once again, Russia appears to be doing just fine, according to the experts we've spoken to here on the show, appears to be doing just fine.
So this was the result of a two-day meeting for European Union leaders. They did not think they would come to an agreement in just a single day. They had sort of bookmarked today to keep going. But this morning they said, no, we got it. We have an agreement. We plan to put sanctions on Russian oil by the end of the year. But for now, these sanctions only apply to oil delivered by sea. But Europe will continue to suck from the pipelines for now until the end of the year. Not everyone agrees with this, though. The president of Hungary is saying, I promised when I got reelected that I wouldn't get involved in these kind of disputes. I don't agree to this, actually.
And meanwhile, people hurting all over Europe. So I just looked at the Polish numbers just a few minutes ago, and Poland's inflation numbers are skyrocketing. I think they're up 12% now. So think about Poland right here. Poland is like 13%, 13.9% in Poland, the highest figure in 24 years for inflation. 1.7% increase in 1 month in Poland. Poland is being used as like the staging ground. Hey, Poland, can we just use you as much as we can right now to funnel as many weapons as we can right through your country? Oh, and also take on as many refugees as you possibly can. We're just going to funnel refugees and weapons right through your country. And your inflation is up 13.9%.
And stop taking gas from Russia. So find it somewhere else. And oh, sorry, it's hot there, you know, and you need to drive places. You know, you're going to have to figure out a way to do that less.
Yeah.
Same story in Spain. Same story in France. They're at almost 12% inflation. Same story in Germany, where there's nearing a 50-year high for inflation. So it's amazing because the story is just not jiving, where we are supposed to applaud that Western leaders are sanctioning oil, which will hurt those of us who live in the West because they think it's hurting Russia when it's not. It's like, what am I missing here? I feel like I've got to the end of a choose your own adventure book. And I'm like, that didn't make sense.
Well, the bullshit on all of this, guys, like this is when you're sitting around talking to your friends and like your friends who don't watch this show and they don't understand how this stuff actually works. Right. It's all bullshit. It's all smoke and mirrors. And so let me just tell you this. Right. The idea of these sea imports. Okay, so 2/3 of which of these sea imports are likely to be mixed with like 49% Russian oil and 51% non-Russian oil. So what they get to say then with these sea imports is it's not Russian oil, right? Because it's like, oh, it's 51% non-Russian oil.
Right.
We mix it with 49% Russian oil, right? Or the EU to impose embargo on Russian oil, more than 2/3 of the imports will be cut immediately. And the EU embargo on Russian oil will not apply to those deliveries through the pipeline. So what is it? Just a big PR campaign.
Yes. I mean, it's very similar to President Biden saying we're going to put more ethanol in fuel so that we reduce our dependence on fuel. But it sort of it relies on the rest of us not knowing that ethanol is actually made with fuel. The ethanol that is put inside as a fuel supplement once. One, it's bad for your car, but two, they have to actually add gasoline to it. Otherwise, it would be subject to alcohol tax because it is essentially just alcohol made from corn.
Right.
And so that product has gas in it. But so basically what he's saying, I feel like this is Les Miserables skit, like they are watering down our gas. That's it. Right. And that and we're supposed to applaud that.
But we're all supposed to still suffer, right? We're still supposed to suffer. We're still supposed to, you know, feel the pain at home. Remember what Kamala Harris said about this on energy? That like what now Americans, you know, Americans are paying, hitting record prices now. I think the average is $4.62. We had it in the newsletter this morning. The average for a gallon is $4.62. It's likely to hit $5 a gallon. Let me know in the chat. How many of you, like, what are you guys paying? Just drop it in the comments right now. You have to be a subscriber to comment. That's just how we have it set. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to read it. So just subscribe to the channel. But what is the gas price where you live right now? Let's see here in the chat, Philip, see if you can keep an eye on who has the highest gas prices right now and diesel prices or petrol prices. So it could be we have viewers from all around the world. I want to see what these prices look like right now.
And you've seen it in reflected in the prices of everything. I just have been noticing that sending UPS labels are like $11 to $12 more per label just because of the gas prices of, you know, what UPS has to endure. The price just to send something state to state is up the price of everything, things that you would not otherwise think, you know, it never ceases to surprise me.
Yeah. So here's Kamala Harris talking.
So right now, the highest number looks like, I was going to say right now, the highest number. Oh, we just got another one came in. It was Angel Baby Cards, but now it's looking like, we've got where'd it go? Hang
what's on. The number?
619.
It's moving. It's 695. 695 is holy the number shit. We're looking for. There we go.
695
in Stockton, California.
Oh, California. Yep, yeah. There you go. Holy smokes. Wow. And it's going to continue to go up. And but you guys got to, this is, by the way, guys, this, because of these Russian sanctions, you know, you're doing this to support democracy. Right. These are your values. Remember, Kamala Harris told us this.
Specifically what they're telling us.
You said Americans will be facing some economic fallout or some hardships. Can you explain to Americans what exactly will they face if this happens?
Sure. As the president talked about in his speech, we are aware that, again, when America stands for her principles and all of the things that we hold dear, it requires sometimes for us to put ourselves out there in a way that maybe we will incur some cost. And in this situation, that may relate to energy costs, for example. Okay.
She said the same thing when she was wearing purple about 2 months ago, three months ago. Actually, no, before the invasion even started. So, yeah, we heard that it was going to cost us because we are collectively standing for our principles. But whose principles is it that we're standing for? And what exactly is it that we're standing for? Is democracy in Ukraine? I'm not sure about that. I mean, when we get to the Mueller report later, we're going to talk about, like, when did we agree on democracy in Ukraine? Because this was not something that American politicians have been united on for a long time. So then voters, we voted for people who wanted to do, obviously we did, right? Because very few politicians are standing against intervention in Ukraine. It's very confusing, and I still just find it so odd that they're asking us to sacrifice for something that they are not being straight with us about.
Sheila McGuire in our chat says $10 a gallon for diesel in Scotland right now.
Wow.
Holy smokes. Yeah, still going up. So President Biden came out today and held a meeting with Jerome Powell, and a lot of people, myself included, were hoping that this wasn't just going to be like a photo op, because you know, a day before he releases in the Wall Street Journal, he releases his own opinion piece in the Wall Street Journal. It must be nice where you can just call up the Wall Street Journal and you're like, hey, here's, you know, here's my plan for fighting inflation. Will you guys print this, please? And so here it is. This is Joe Biden's plan for fighting inflation. And it lays it out in sort of three parts. And I have to say, you know, this is his layout here. But when I read the Seeking Alpha had a great article on sort of the breakdown of all of this, Biden lays out plan to fight inflation before his Powell meeting. Isn't that sort of like undercutting the meeting? Like, what the hell's the meeting for? You've already said you're not going to get in the way of the Fed, right? So you're going to release your own plan. And like Jerome Powell's like, all right, then what am I doing here? Like, why am I showing up?
Yes.
What do I have to do here?
I mean, the first part of the plan is to let the Fed fight inflation, but I will not get involved with the Fed like my predecessor did, because we may remember that President Trump liked to just scream at Jerome Powell for, you know, keeping inflation too high in order to, he wanted a better economy sort of on his record, right? So he's like, I'm not going to do that, but I want the Fed to do what's good for me.
And then also take a look at my laptop here. If I can get, where is that screen on my little thing? I can't. Can you pull it up? Oh, there it is. The strategy, he says, the price at the pump is elevated in large part because Russian oil, gas, and refining capacity are off the market. We can't let up on our global effort to punish Putin for what he's done, and we must mitigate these effects for American consumers. That's why I led the largest release from the global oil reserves in history. Congress could help right away by passing clean energy tax credits and investments that I have proposed. Okay, that is hilarious. All right, can we go through that? That is a giant pile of steaming crap right there. The price at the pump is elevated in large part because Russian oil, gas, and refining capacity are off the market. As if, how'd that happen? So, yeah, you're telling, you guys did that.
You took it off the market.
You took it off the market. So this isn't like it's Hurricane Katrina, right? And we're worried about oil reserves, or we're worried about, you know, you took it off the market, right?
Right. So don't, this is not a free market. This is a political market.
Right.
So, okay. And that is decisions of leaders, right? We actively see leaders now in Eastern Europe saying, we're not going to make these political decisions. We're going to continue business as usual. And then we still get gas, right? So, it's fallacy to let us think that we had no choice. We have had a choice.
So there's like there's three piles of crap in this one paragraph, right? So we're punishing Putin for what he's done. That's you're not punishing him. Actually, they're doing pretty well. Okay, so you're not punishing them. This is only hurting us. We took it off the market. That's why I led the largest release of global oil reserves in history. Who cares? So big, it didn't do anything to affect markets. Maybe it alleviated a little bit of pressure for like 4 days. Good. You opened up the strategic oil reserves.
Right. Well, based on the amount and based on the consumption in America, that amount was supposed to last about 8 days.
Right. Yeah. So, oh yeah, 8 days, I said four or five days. Mm-hmm. And then Congress could help right away by passing clean energy tax credits and investments that I have proposed. So clean energy tax credits are going to get us out of this mess. I'm going to fight inflation. So please explain to me. And, you know, Peter Ducey asked whatever his name, the new White House press secretary, like last week, this question. She couldn't answer it. It's like, how does... You know, sanctioning Putin actually lower gas prices for us at home. You know, how does doing any of this actually lower gas prices for us at home? How does passing clean energy tax credits and investments lower your pain at home? Can anyone help me with this?
Do you think that it would be, I know people don't like to be told to conserve, especially when the military is not, the federal government is not, right? But would it ring a bit more sincere if the White House said, look, gas is really expensive. There are all types of market forces, some that we created and some that we didn't, that are going to make this continue. Can you find a way to conserve? Can you take the bus? Can you, right? There's nothing like that. It's like, Americans, keep living like you always live, which is consume everything, right? Water, gas, food, whatever the hell you want. And it's just going to still be really high, right? So that's not helpful. Would it then be helpful to say, we need to rethink our way of life?
Well, that's maybe a larger, broader discussion,
well,
right?
Well, that's what we're here for.
I know, but I know you go down that is a different, I think it's a different argument, because what they're telling us is that this is all because of Putin. It's a Putin price hike. The reason that inflation is running so hot is because of Putin, which is garbage.
Yes.
It was happening before that.
But it does not change the reality that life will continue to get more expensive, wages will not go up, taxes will go up at some point when Biden has his way. And so for the rest of us, it is time to rethink our life of consumption. We have to.
Well, I mean, we already are. We're being forced to.
Right.
So maybe this is part of the Great Reset, right? This is part of this great discussion about forcing people into these green tax credits, forcing people to move away from fossil fuels, forcing people to, to buy, I don't know what, you know, because they want to have this control. So if you're forcing people to buy cheaper goods, which we saw now that's happening across the United States and in the UK, they're buying cheaper things.
Yeah.
How is that helping the businesses that lobby Congress and have, you know, the ears of the White House, right? I'm sure people that make those high, you know, nice televisions and so forth are not happy about people not being able to afford this stuff anymore. So I'm sure they're going to be hearing from these, you know, from these Wall Street types.
Yes. HSM is pointing out when we are using gas for petrol. Thank you for that distinction. Yes, we are talking about petrol specifically, but also other energy exports as well.
Basically, we're having, you know, in California is about to have major blackouts this summer. You know, they're not set up for it. We saw what's happened in Texas last year. Right. They set up all these wind farms. And of course, they didn't have the capacity to deal with what was going on, what unfolded, and they froze up and they couldn't work. And then they also Texas wasn't ready. And then California's going to have all these blackouts this summer. It's going to be an absolute disaster.
I guess I've been reading this book called Unquenchable from a policy expert, a university professor out of Arizona, and he talks about all of the ways that Americans just consume water with no understanding of what it's costing the earth or what it's costing them. And now we're having these conservation efforts that really don't do much because we don't pay very much for water. In most cases, in most municipalities, you don't pay for actually the amount of water. You pay for either the transport of that water or the electricity or the power, the water company to deliver it to you. But you're not really paying per gallon. And he says that unless politicians and leaders start to incentivize reduction of use or actually help people to understand what's going on in terms of the market forces, in terms of like, did you know that wells are not regulated, that you can dig a well whenever the hell you want? There's no limit on the amount of well. There's no real testing of these wells. And now the human body does not digest certain medicines that we're taking, like birth control or Viagra or some of these hormone replacements that the opioid epidemic. Those things, 90% of them are filtered out through your urine and now are in our water systems. Like, there is a real water crisis coming. I want to talk about this more on a later show. But no politician is preparing us for it and saying, we overconsume, we have to rethink our way of life. Instead, it's playing politics as if we can all continue with our lives, and we can't. There is no situation in which in 10 years we can consume at this level. And so,
well, he says we need to reduce the cost of everyday goods by fixing broken supply chains, improving infrastructure, cracking down on exorbitant fees, the cost of ocean freight companies. And he also then goes on to talk about we have to reduce the price of prescription drugs by giving Medicare the power to negotiate all of this under his inflation plan. First of all, where does inflation come from? Right. I mean,
government spending
and government printing of money. Here's an idea. You know, the $40 billion that you literally just mailed to Vladimir Zelensky? What if we did something with that? You want to talk about crumbling infrastructure? I mean, you literally can say this, speak out of both sides of your mouth, and we literally support this crap. I mean, it is unbelievable how we stand there when we watch this unfolding right before our eyes. And then we reelect these people. You know, we have an opportunity right now. We have 100 million Americans that don't vote for either of these two parties, and they both were in lockstep voting for $40 billion to send to Ukraine. So we continue to funnel, all sorts of weapons and medicine and refugee help and everything else to Ukraine because it's our proxy war.
Well, he talks about how the Congressional Budget Office has said that the deficit will shrink by the end of the year. That doesn't mean that there won't still be a deficit. It means it won't grow at the same astronomical amount as it did last year. It will still grow, but by just a shade less, right? Okay. And so that's how it's almost like you can say whatever you want about numbers to make them look good. That doesn't make them good. The deficit is still astronomical and government spending is still a ton.
Yeah. So what was that super chat there about blackouts? Blackouts not caused by, I can't read it from
renewables. People with solar and batteries were fine. It's fossil fuel, rotten infrastructure, and lack of a smart grid that hurt Texas. Green tech is the solution, not the problem. In fact, that was something I think we covered here, is that when Texas started to have these rolling blackouts, a lot of people who were off the grid did just fine. And it was interesting that the press did not seem that interested in pointing them out as success stories.
No, they didn't want to cover it. But also the large windmills, though, did freeze up. So there were a lot of the wind turbines that did freeze in Texas. They weren't ready for it. So there was some of that. And to your point, absolutely. But I do want to talk about Ukraine, and I want to talk about more in depth now about what is actually unfolding in that country in this next phase of the war. And I want to start with some fakery as we talk about Ukraine now, because there's been a lot of fake news stories coming out of this war. There's a lot of propaganda, and you're starting to see the propaganda starting to fracture a little bit. Here's Glenn Greenwald talking about, I got to get this here it is. Here's Glenn Greenwald. Western media all but refused to acknowledge Russian advances for the first 3 months of this war, bombarding everyone with a relentless narrative about feisty Ukrainians kicking their ass. Now reality is emerging, as it eventually does with war. The propaganda is slowly eroding. So what are we talking about? Well, there are a couple stories over the past few days that I thought were hilarious. A few weeks ago, I don't know if you recall this story. It was plastered a lot over the Western media. You can take my laptop here. Russian troops pushed back to the border. This was a story that was carried on Al Jazeera and other Western media outlets. I think Reuters carried it as well. Russian troops pushed back to the border, Ukraine. If confirmed, it would suggest a counteroffensive by Ukrainian soldiers having increasing success in expelling Russian forces from the northeast. Now, I was digging for this video tonight and I couldn't find it on the fly. I had it and I couldn't find it through my archives, but it showed basically Ukrainian troops. They posted it on Facebook initially, and it was near near Kharkiv, and they basically pushed Russian forces back and advanced as far as the border with Russia. That's what they were saying. And it basically showed them out in the woods, sort of like planting the Ukrainian flag at the border, basically saying, here we are, like, we got this border post, we've pushed the Russians back. Not so fast. Because a lot of people, even Larry Johnson, who we interviewed here on the show, he's like, this was ridiculous. He's like, you could have literally been out in your backyard taking that video and posting it. But apparently this came from the Ukrainian government that was asking for more of these like propaganda videos to put out on social media. So now we know the guy that was the head of the SBU in Kharkov, this comes to us from Levy Godman over on Twitter. She posted this. The head of the SBU of Kharkov, who was fired yesterday, has already started to talk. In mid-May, Ukrainian channels distributed a video showing the military personnel of the armed forces of Ukraine going to the Russian border and setting up a border post. Well, even then, there were suggestions that the video was staged, and today, this was officially confirmed by the ex-head of the Kharkiv Regional Department of the SBU, who recently was fired after a conflict with Zelensky. According to him, personnel of the 227th Battalion of the 127th Brigade of the Defense were involved in filming of this performance for the president. The recording did not go according to plan. A battle began during which the Ukrainian fighters had to shamefully throw the installed pole that they put with the flag and they had to run away. The losses of the armed forces of Ukraine amounted to 4 people killed, 3 wounded. I mean, this is just one simple example, but this just goes to show you the level of propaganda that the Western media just soaked up, right? Oh my God, they took over a border post.
Yeah.
And as Larry Johnson pointed out, well, where's the building? Where's the border building, the facility? You know, you cross the border, they got like a guard gate and stuff.
Well, the photo could be geotagged and show that we're on the border. You get no other evidence.
There's nothing there.
That.
Like, oh, here we are in the woods. Here's a pole. Here's my Ukrainian flag.
But that's not funny because, according to that report, 3 or 4 people were killed because of this shenanigan.
Yeah, because of this propaganda.
Can shenanigan be singular?
I think you can have a shenanigan. I think, because shenanigans.
I think it's still shenanigans. I think that's just.
What if you only pulled one shenanigan?
Let's ask our chat room right now. Yeah. Do we have any people from, is shenanigan an Irish word or it's a, like an Irish?
I have no idea.
I've been to like a couple of Irish pubs called shenanigans. I think I've.
I used to have a neighbor who would come over and lecture
I think anybody,
me about shenanigans.
Anybody prone to pull shenanigans though isn't likely to just pull one of them. So maybe that's just maybe you're the only person that ever thought to do just one shenanigan. I'm just going to do a shenanigan
I've
and call
once.
It good.
I didn't like it.
She's like, wow, this I'm breaking the rules.
I can't break rules.
Yeah, she's not the rule breaker. But so that's just one piece of this. I want to talk about what Scott Ritter says about the third phase of the war in just a second. But I also want to show you this was in the Times of London today. The Times. This is probably my favorite headline. I think this is probably my favorite headline of maybe of the year. This is probably my favorite headline of the year. Azov Battalion drops neo-Nazi symbol exploited by Russian propagandists. So,
okay.
So just I want you to read that a couple of times. Just read it along with me and let it like soak in. They drop this symbol exploited by Russian propagandists. So the idea is, as Caitlin Johnstone points out, that it's our fault. Like, it's our fault for
misinterpreting the sun signal symbol on the Azov Brigade's logo.
Like, when we were in World War II, like, that symbol, you know, the famous symbol, we don't even want to use the name here because God knows what YouTube does with that kind of stuff, right, when we say those names. Like, that symbol was misinterpreted. Like, I'm sorry. It's you stupid Westerners that just don't get it. It's propaganda. So it's Russian propaganda. So now they've changed their patches. They've updated their patches, I guess, to be there as part of this whole PR campaign rebranding right now. And this is my favorite. Caitlin Johnstone's newsletter this morning highlights this. She says, "Empire solves Ukraine's Nazi problem with a logo change." Like, we got it. We figured out how to stop them.
Well, you know, okay.
Next we'll be hearing like, no, we swear it's just a windmill.
Yeah.
Right.
That'll be the next.
We're green energy.
Can we take a look at it? Can you zoom in on it and see other... because it is missing this black sun now, right?
Okay.
So it has three swords.
Mm-hmm.
Upright, three upward swords, and that says Azov. Okay.
Now you sent me a piece. What? Okay. She doesn't want to talk about it.
No, because you know there is a fine line on what you can talk about on this platform, and I'd rather not.
All right, fine.
So
we can't say it. Yes, it involved unicorns. It involved unicorns and a gay pride flag. I mean, that's right?
Yes, which is fine, but we're not going to talk about it in the context of the Ukrainian fighters, just because I don't feel safe doing it here. I'm sorry.
When you
I would
say
love
you don't
to.
Feel safe doing it, what do you mean?
Because there is a certain narrative that is accepted on YouTube's platform, and questioning certain things is not acceptable on this platform. I would love to talk about those kind of things as sort of subliminal messages and questioning the main narrative, but I think that we've gone as far as I'm comfortable with right now.
Okay.
So if we'd like to maintain our place on this platform, we have to play by
the
rules.
Guess if we want to have a channel, then I guess we should not mention certain things about it. But so anyway, the PR rebranding is happening right now, and it's on the front page of the Times. So I guess we can talk about that. All right, let's talk about the next phase of the war. So Scott Ritter out with a new report this morning in Consortium News. Scott Ritter, of course, former weapons inspector, U.S. Marine, who's the one who told us, hey, there's no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. He's been a great voice on this war, and his analysis has been really, really fantastic. He has laid out this next phase in Ukraine and where we are right now.
So he mentions that the first phases, which Vladimir Putin actually did say to his to a national address just before the invasion, was to maintain control of Crimea, continue on to capture control of the Russian separatist areas. Also, he mentions restoring water supply to Crimea, which he says that Ukraine had cut off since 2014, and also to obtain control of certain bridges in between these areas along the, would it be eastern, or along the eastern border of Ukraine.
Mm-hmm. So phase three, he says now, is the challenge facing Russia going forward, he says. Let me just read from Scott's report. He says, therefore, it's how to define the scale and the scope of phase three so that it retains the kind of legal authority it asserted for the first two phases while assembling sufficient combat power to accomplish its tasks. Among these would appear to me to include overthrowing the Zelensky government and replacing it with one willing and able to outlaw the ideology of Bandera. It also might entail launching a military operation into central and western Ukraine to completely destroy the reconstructed elements of the Ukrainian military along with the surviving Azov-affiliated forces. So,
now, this seems crazy because when you talk about regime change, that's just something you're not supposed to talk about, right? You're not supposed to influence another country's choice of leader, right? And when there's been some inklings about that, saying that Putin should be replaced, in the United States, most politicians walked that back. But when we get to looking over these redacted documents from the Mueller investigation, you'll see that that actually has been something that's been talked about for nearly 10 years, which is replacing Zelensky with someone else. There is, that's in the redacted documents from the Mueller investigation, and we are going to talk about it. So is that something that, you know, is this just him thinking this up, or is he reading into previously published documents with which pro-Russian people who were close to the Trump campaign actually said that this is what they wanted? Or is this writing on the wall? I mean, it's crazy to think about, right? But what if, I don't know, it's just something, it's a what if. I do not think the West would stand for this at this point, but look at what the West is trying to not stand for now and not getting very far.
Yeah. But we still have to support Zelensky. Like, this is the message. I was watching Fox News and they literally had on a guy, a CIA guy, Dan Hoffman. I'd never heard of this guy before. But I mean, he literally is carrying the water for the West. I mean, he's like, we've got to continue to funnel money and weapons into this region. We've got to continue to pour money in there. And oh, by the way, like, Putin is weaponizing food. This is why we need to stand strong. We need to keep them in the fight. Listen to this guy.
What do you make of this? Do we need to give more weapons?
Yeah, we do. Absolutely. We've got to keep Ukraine in the fight. Vladimir Putin is trying to leverage every bit of pressure he can on Ukraine and on the West. He's using food, weaponizing food, to try to induce the West to reduce our support to Ukraine. But we've got to keep Ukraine in the fight. That's the only way that we can reach a resolution that protects not only Ukraine, but our NATO allies, especially on the borders of Russia.
Well, that doesn't make a lot of sense in the context of the fact that food is exempted from current sanctions from the West. Russia has been exporting food all along since the invasion. And just last week, Russian ships offered to export more food out of Ukraine, which, again, Russia has been delivering food to the West. So why would we not let them do that now? The facts just don't support that. We might want to think that because we, you know, want to unite it behind a common enemy, but it doesn't track.
Right. Yeah. So food, you know, Putin's weaponizing food against the West. Okay. When you think about all of the sanctions that are in place that we put in place, it doesn't pass the smell test. But we got to keep them in the fight, he says. So you got to continue to funnel more weapons in there. We just sent $40 billion. They're already itching to send more now. So they're already itching to send, you know, more heavy weapons and so forth. And so we got to keep them in the fight. For what? They're literally being destroyed. Like, the entire eastern section now is being destroyed, as Scott Ritter points out. Like, it's close to being done. I mean, they're going to have some holdouts. We can look at some of these cities where it's now going to be similar to what happened in Mariupol, right? So it could be standoffs for a while as we have to go into kindergartens where some of these guys have set up shops. They have to, like, be very careful as they're going into these areas before they take them over. It's going to be a little while. It's going to be a drag. But they're not winning. They're getting their asses handed to them. But so we need to keep funneling money to them.
Well, even some of the Western media is talking about how Ukrainian army is just dispirited and tired, and they don't know what they're up to, and they don't want to keep going. And a lot of these fighters, remember, were just not allowed to leave because men of fighting age were not allowed to leave. They didn't want this, right? They didn't sign up to fight to the death in this way. They just weren't allowed to have much other choice.
Right. Yeah. So let us know your thoughts on that story. We've got more news to get to. We're going to talk about the Mueller report and some really interesting Ukrainian angles in that. We're also going to talk about Justin Trudeau and what the Canadians are doing on handguns specifically, and among other things, and latest on the WHO treaty that unfolded yesterday. Most Americans aren't even really aware of what's happening with this pandemic treaty, which could really give up an enormous amount of personal freedoms to an unelected group of people. So we will talk about that and the updates there.
All right. I do want to talk about this Justice Department because this Justice Department release. So let's talk about it. The Justice Department released a summary of the Mueller report last week because the New York Times sought it out through a Freedom of Information request. Now, this is a really confusing story, and we're going to try and break it down because it involves so many pieces that are still in play, right? Still exerting power over our lives. So Trump, Ukraine, the U.S. Justice Department, Russia, the Biden administration. I have to think that maybe the government is banking on us not understanding this so that we continue to support this war, which is why I spent the day trying to understand it, and I'm still not sure I do, but let's see what we can do. Okay. Recall the Mueller investigation. This was a special counsel appointed to the FBI to investigate why then President Trump fired then FBI Director James Comey and whether or not it was to protect himself from exposure to from potentially illegal activity related to Russia. Okay, it was led by former FBI Director Robert Mueller. Now, it was extensive. It was expensive, and it ended kind of like a pop balloon that no one heard because it was so politicized. The Mueller investigation was split into three different camps. They called it Team R, which investigated everything related to Russian interference in the election. Team 600, which investigated everything related to Trump's possible obstruction of justice. And Team M, which investigated anything related to Paul Manafort. Now, Team M was led by Andrew Weissman, who wrote a book on his investigation. This newly released summary was written by Weissman's team about the work of Team M, right? So it's all about Manafort. This summary is, again, heavily redacted, but it does track what Weissman says in his book. I actually did read this book when it came out, so I have a little perspective about it. Weissman wrote his book because he says he doesn't agree how Mueller investigation, how it ended, how it was politicized. And this memo that was released this week, he wrote for the same reasons. Now, we don't have similar memos from Team R or Team 600 because the people who led those investigations didn't write a book or leave a memo or paper trail of discontent. Now, Weissman starts the book detailing how he had finished up his work on the investigation. He was driving back to his New York apartment with his dog when he learned that then Attorney General William Barr had released his own summary of the Mueller report to the press. Now, Weissman said that this summary was twisted and politicized, and it let Trump off the hook when Weissman said that those were not necessarily their agreement inside the Mueller investigation. They really did have concerns about Trump's lawbreaking that they found, but they thought that Barr just swept it all under the rug in his summary. Now, in his book, Weissman points out all the ways that the Trump administration got in their way, how they all were saving and storing documents while they were doing this investigation in triplicate, because they always were worried that the plug would be pulled on them at any time. They also used search warrants as a record of what they were doing. They filed more than 500 search warrants with extensive detail into each as sort of an anthology of what they were finding. So Weissman had this Team M summary written up, and he circulated it to other teams, and the New York Times requested this, and that's why we have it. Again, heavily redacted. Now, I do want to say this. As much as the press likes to decry the Mueller investigation, I think that if you read the book, it seems that they got it right, in my opinion. Weissman doesn't think so, but I do. In the end, they did not indict President Trump because they simply could not put a hard enough pin on what he had done to benefit Russia. There were things they could have charged him with, and he lays it all out in the book, but Mueller decided not to because he called them gray areas, and of course, you should not charge someone with gray areas. Mueller also believed that he would never have the chance, President Trump, that is, to properly defend himself while he was in office, and he didn't want to do what he thought James Comey had done to Hillary Clinton, which is impugn her when she would not have her day in court. So Comey was speaking about Clinton's emails in the days just before the 2016 election, and she would not have a chance to defend herself in court before she went to the polls, right? So Mueller and Weissman thought that that was wrong and they didn't want to do that to Trump. Okay, now Mueller's team could not prove whether Trump ever knew what he was doing or whether he knew that he had pro-Russia people swarming around him and his children trying to get them to do their bidding. The same question applies to Hunter Biden, but Biden is a lifelong politician who should have known that his son really couldn't be doing this stuff and offering him up as access, but we're going to get back to that in a second. But first to Team M. I know this was a long run-up, but it's such a confusing story, and I feel like we need the context. So, okay, Team M started investigating Manafort, but Weissman says that already at the time there were four open investigations on Manafort when the special counsel began their work. Now, Manafort served as an advisor to Ukraine's president, Viktor Yanukovych, from 2010 until he fled to Russia in 2014, at which time Manafort stayed close to him on the Russian side, cozying up to Russian oligarchs who were close to Russian President Vladimir Putin. The report even alleges that Manafort was part of the campaign that tried to frame the annexation of Crimea as a good thing because Ukrainians were persecuting Russians in that area. Okay. Did we know that at the time that Paul Manafort either believed that or was part of that? Manafort had close ties and earned a lot of money working with pro-Russian oligarchs inside of Russia, one of them being Oleg Deripaska, you may have heard this name, who helped Manafort helped to advise on installing governments that were helpful to his business in Ukraine. Okay. Manafort joined the Trump campaign in the summer of 2016, but worked for free in order to boost his brand as an international politician. Indeed, after he was hired, he announced his hire to both the Ukrainian and the Russian governments, hoping that this would prompt Ukraine to pay him $2 million that they owed him on past projects. So Manafort was caught sending updates about the Trump campaign to Deripaska through Konstantin Kilimnik and Rick Gates over WhatsApp. Okay. Konstantin Kilimnik is a Russian and a Ukrainian citizen. He served in the Russian government and reportedly worked for the Russian military, but also he has Ukrainian citizenship. And in the early 2000s, he was working as a pro-Russian force in Ukraine. So both sides, right? During the election, Manafort met with Kilimnik in New York City, and according to the summary, Manafort admitted at the August 2nd meeting that Kilimnik, this is a quote, discussed a plan that amounted to a means for Russia to take over the eastern part of Ukraine, which would then create a semi-autonomous region in eastern Ukraine and have Yanukovych elected to head that region. So this was a meeting happening in 2016, and it's happening right now. It's happening.
Right. So that he would take over the eastern
piece has not happened. But this plan to take over the eastern part of Ukraine was discussed by Manafort with pro-Russian agents in New York City in August of 2016.
So why the hell, I get that this is the alternative version of the Mueller report. So, and Mueller says, well, I had each team write about these up for posterity.
Mueller didn't say that.
Weissman did.
Weissman wanted it done.
Yeah. So, I had them all write this up for posterity. That's how Politico reported it back in December. So they all have this all written up. You guys have your team summary written up. This to me seems like a huge piece of the story. Like, why did we not see this in the Mueller report, the actual Mueller report?
I'm not asking you if
you know the exact answer for this, but I mean, it seems to me like this is a big piece of it.
Yes,
and certainly would have been useful in the run-up to the war. Like, if we knew this and government people actually knew this, and this is what bothers me too, is like, if you're sitting on this shit to publish a book, right? Like, if you're sitting on this stuff, this is a big question. Like, if you have access to certain things like this, in the same criticism that came down about what's his name, Philip, remember, who was it? It was John Bolton. Remember Bolton, Ambassador Bolton, like apparently had all this like stuff that was going to come out in his book, which could have influenced the election, which could have, you know.
Well, I think Weissman, he had to get his book vetted by the Justice Department. And he was given permission to publish. There's a lot about this meeting. Mm-hmm. And I think that, what he was less interested in this end game of Russia. He doesn't actually, seem to care much about what happens in that region. He cares that Manafort is involved in it, agrees to it, and says, okay, when Trump's elected, we'll work with you to this aim.
So sort of, the opposite of what the Obama administration wanted, which was installing a puppet government with Vladimir, in Kiev and doing our bidding.
Yes.
So it's like the opposite of that. You're getting to see this play out in this way.
And so, the piece of this that it remains fiction is the Yanukovych part. Where is he? This article that just from a few days ago, last we heard, he was living in exile in Russia and is still trying to call for peace talks and warning Ukraine not to over rely on the West, right? Don't trust the West. Okay. So,
Well, it is interesting then you think about the Republican politics in all of this, right? Because you have Mitch McConnell, who is, vehemently trying to change the Republican Party away from Trump. Stands out and says, I'm going to fly to meet with Zelensky.
Yes.
Show support to Zelensky. the Republican Party, Lindsey Graham, that wing of the Republican Party is right here to support you, Vladimir Zelensky. And then you have President Trump mocking him on stage at the NRA convention, saying, hey, instead of sending $40 billion to Ukraine, maybe we could actually do something here in the United States. Gas prices are through the roof, et cetera. So you're, you know, and you get to see this. Maybe it's a relationship with Putin. Maybe it's a, hey, we don't actually want you to, you know, to have an all-out war.
Yes.
And you see this division right now in the Republican Party is fascinating to watch.
But to sort of pull this back together and look at the other side of it, right? So Ukraine was at the center of the first impeachment trial for President Trump, mm-hmm. right? So a year later, in 2015, a year after Yanukovych left Ukraine, in 2015, up pops Hunter Biden, starting to work with pro-Ukraine companies, advising them on Ukrainian oil and gas through his ties to his company called Burisma. And he, at the time, was promising access to his father, Vice President Biden, at the time. So on the face of it, it does seem like what Biden was doing was what Manafort was also accused of, which is having offering access to business ties, right, to someone you know that either is the president, will be the president, or is the vice president, right, on other sides of the fight. Now, this is not a right or wrong assessment. I'm simply pointing out that people connected to U.S. politicians have been using their influence for personal gain to exploit this Russian-Ukraine energy market and energy and borders and politics. And there's a lot of money there for a long time. But, you know, Manafort is still paying this price because he now is being, even though he was pardoned, he's being sued again in the state of Florida. But Hunter Biden is also under investigation. And so this is the weird piece of it, right, is because President Trump went through his impeachment trials because he asked Zelensky to investigate Hunter Biden, right, mm-hmm. And he held up aid in exchange for this political favor. But the Justice Department at the time said, well, we're not going to investigate Hunter Biden. And Trump thought that either he wanted it either for his own good or because he knew something. We can't say now, right? The Justice Department at the time said, we're not going to investigate Hunter Biden. But now they are saying that that investigation has been underway since 2018, which this timeline, it stinks, right? So I just kind of like wrote notes. If you look at this timeline that I, can you, do you see it? Number 11, keep going down. Okay. What I'm confused about, and you know, I welcome your
11.
Okay, 11. You don't see it. So, if in 2015, right, Hunter Biden starts his work in Ukraine, and then in 2016, Paul Manafort is offering his access to Trump, right, to overthrow Ukraine, and then in 2018, Hunter Biden begins is under investigation. But then in 2019, Trump asked Zelensky to do his own investigation in his own government, right? And then in December 2019, Trump is actually impeached for this, right? So there are so many questions here. Do you see how there are more questions than there are answers? Like, if Hunter Biden was in fact under investigation, then maybe Trump was asking for something because he shouldn't know it, but maybe he would know it, right?
Right.
So then he was asking for, maybe he was asking for something legitimate. Did Congress ever care? They went ahead with this impeachment, right? Mm. Why is the U.S. so bullish on defending Ukraine and not, say, other countries like Syria, Yemen, Afghanistan, Ethiopia? What you can see here, it's beyond the, like, we're just the nice people who defend democracy. We have political ties to people making a lot of money.
A lot of money. And, you know, again, we learned about bio labs in multiple bio labs and pharmaceutical labs inside of Ukraine. Like, this is well documented. The federal government, Victoria Nuland, confirmed it, that have gone back years there. Like, what are we doing
in right?
What are we doing there? Yes. And sometimes this is like when people talk about like the deep state.
Yeah.
And they want to feel like, and they're like, yeah, maybe the deep state, that's just a conspiracy theory. It's like, no, it's not. When you see these powers at work, when you talk to people that work at the CIA, when you talk to people that work formerly in the intelligence agencies, yeah. you know that we are simply pawns on a freaking chessboard.
Well, like this prediction, like, hey, Russia wants to take over this eastern part of Ukraine and keep Crimea and say that he's, you know, say that they're just protecting Russian interests there or people who are being persecuted. And like that happened. Someone close to Republican circles knew that in 2016. Was it really only Paul Manafort that knew that?
And all of the pieces were coming together ahead of time for, you know, the stoking of the Russian bear, so to speak, right? The yeah. idea that, oh, well, now you're amassing forces by Crimea again, which was the catalyst largely for Russia to invade the eastern part of Ukraine. And President Biden basically nailed the date on when this was going to happen. So, yes, it all, you know, you can say it's conspiracy theories, but it all comes to fruition. Any more on this?
I mean, just more questions. No, but we welcome, you know, we welcome your input on it because there are connections that someone like me who just like reads a book can't get to, right? But there's a lot of smokiness around powerful people, and those things are playing out in our real world, and then we're asked to participate in this war by like economic hardship. I give up, you know?
The only smokiness I like is in my meat or like a smoky whiskey. Have you ever had like that, you know, with the, like a whiskey with like
that's the bougie.
The smoke.
No,
you
I don't
know,
do
they
that.
Light a piece of wood and do like the smoky whiskey.
They make smoked beers and I absolutely hate them. I've had one before and it tastes like somebody put like 3 drops of liquid smoke in a lager and it's just not, no. It's not good. I don't understand people.
That no, I want like
that
a good
a carcinogen?
Smoky brisket.
Like, wouldn't you, why?
I mean, what's it?
We have enough carcinogens.
So is alcohol. So like,
yes, it absolutely
you're just adding,
is.
Maybe they cancel each other out. When you have your smoky beer with smoke, it cancels it out and it gets rid of the cancer. I'm going to try that tonight.
You know, it's like if somebody poisons your drink and then you put other poison in it, they cancel each other out. I'm pretty sure that's how life works.
Right.
And by the way, don't anybody do that because it is
not, that's some shenanigans.
That is not how it works.
Hey,
that's just a shenanigan.
That's one shenanigan. Hey, everyone watching right now, please smash that like button. We've got 2 more big stories to get to, and you're not going to want to miss this World Economic Forum and the World Health Organization story. You got to stick around for that because it's kind of shocking. I think maybe we saved the best for last, but the most encouraging piece for last, and we'll get to that. But first, we got to talk about, let's go north of the border to our favorite dictator. That is Justin Trudeau. I saw a tweet from a mom who said, we just traveled through Europe. We're from Canada. And everywhere we went while we were in Europe, my son was asked by other people, where are you from? And he said, Canada. And the people said, oh, your president is a dictator. Like, I guess this message has traveled pretty far. He's come over to Brussels a number of times to make sure he sticks his nose into things. Well, of course, awful.
Sorry, if I could just real quick before you get started. What's interesting about that is I remember about 10 years ago reading something that people said, like, if you're an American traveling in Europe and people ask you where you're from, say Canada, because they'll treat you more respectfully than they will if you say you're from the U.S. So I find that very interesting.
That is true. All right. But maybe now. But maybe now, like the opposite is true. Maybe now, like you say, you know, people feel sorry for you now if you're from the United States. They're like, oh, honey, I'm sorry. You're from the United States.
Say New Zealand.
Did I say New Zealand? No, yeah, say New Zealand. No, say Iceland.
No, I said.
Yeah. You should say New Zealand. Yeah. A friend of mine, she's Canadian, and we both live here in Europe. And we joke about how in a restaurant, Americans will get so demanding. Like, what do you mean you're going to charge me extra for water or ketchup? Or, you know, like my mother gets really indignant about like how there's no free refills on coffee. And she's like, oh, Canadians just apologize. You're like, can I have ketchup? And they're like, we don't have ketchup. And she goes, I'm sorry. My mother would never apologize for saying.
They say, I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry.
All right. So let's get back to the story. So Justin Trudeau, a major announcement in Canada about gun violence and the seizure of guns, the taking away of guns, says Canada has a real gun problem. And of course, this all falls on the heels of what happened in Texas. And so people are coming to, you know, quickly out of the woodwork to say, wait a second, And I'm of two minds of this, and we'll kind of like have a discussion about this, because normally I think his, you know, lockdown on freedom in Canada is absolutely awful. You know, making sure that people can't travel across borders if they don't have certain pharmaceuticals injected into their bodies, taking away and seizing people's bank accounts, taking on extra government powers is all absolutely awful, of course. And so he comes out with this announcement on handguns to great controversy and great fanfare. Let's listen to Herr Dictator.
We're introducing legislation to implement a national freeze on handgun ownership. What this means is that it will no longer be possible to buy, sell, transfer, or import handguns anywhere in Canada. In other words, we're capping the market for handguns.
Sorry, does he have a little cowlick right here? Because, you know, we always are on about how his hair is so perfect.
I wanted to point out the nodding bobbleheads behind him. So I want to see if we can keep playing that video there.
Yeah, play it again and look for the cowlick. See it off the... Yes, I'm right.
What does that mean, though, the cowlick? Anyway, so all the, like, shaking bob... Well, why are they all in a mask? Like, what is going on? Like, they're all in a mask in Canada right now. Okay. And but he's not in a mask, so he's okay. So anyway, the reaction to this has been pretty fierce on both sides. So let me just show you just some, like, both kind of different versions of this right now. So this is David Craden, his piece. He says, Trudeau shamelessly exploits U.S. tragedy and takes aim at legitimate gun owners.
Is really stupid thing to say, though. Like, I'm shamelessly gonna try not to get my people killed at the same time. How about I act fast? And
What he says. Here's his tweet about it. Is anxious to characterize his opposition as armed and violent, and he's intentionally creating a phony handgun crisis when none exists. And so then you have the Globe and Mail out with this piece, their editorial board. So I don't want to say firing back, because I don't know if they're aware of David Craden or if they have any relationship with him at all or not. But this is what the opinion pages of the Globe and Mail have to say. Canada has a real gun violence problem, but it's mostly not the one that liberals want to talk about. And specifically talking about how the Statistics Canada report released last week says that since 2009, the per capita rate of firearms pointed at someone in the commission of a crime has nearly tripled, and the rate at which guns are fired with the intent to kill or wound is up fivefold, and specifically talks about firearms-related crimes, mostly involving long guns, but it's in cities and suburbs where crime is most likely to involve a firearm, usually an easy-to-conceal handgun. StatScan says 63% of firearm-related violent crimes in urban areas involved handguns in 2020. So 63% of firearm-related violent crimes in urban areas involved handguns in 2020.
Well, Canada did have a mass shooting in 2020 in Nova Scotia, where 23 people were killed. And after that, assault-style rifles were banned in Canada already. So now this next piece, which is handgun-related, the Canadian government says, well, handguns are responsible for 59% of gun violence since the year 2009. So, I hesitate to call this opportunistic when you see something awful happen to children and you realize, okay, there is gun violence in my own country. This is terrifying. I'm going to do something drastic about it.
Well, let's give a little context then to David's article here about this, because I think we're, join both sides of this, and I'd love to hear our audience weigh in on this. So he says, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau is again beating a dead horse by freezing a handgun sales and threatening more gun control in a country where it's already virtually impossible to own a handgun. Have you ever tried to purchase a handgun? He says, look for the long gun registry to return, because Trudeau knows gun owners are not his constituency, and he's desperately looking to find support wherever he can, even if he has to exploit an American tragedy to do so. Again, Trudeau is showing how remarkably similar his political instincts are to that one-trick political pony, U.S. President Joe Biden, who similarly used the Robb Elementary School tragedy to peddle gun control and demonize supporters of Second Amendment rights. So what he's getting at, David, and this is a legitimate, I mean, this is absolutely legitimate. You know, I'm from Philadelphia, where almost every violent crime is with an illegal gun. Like, it's not legal handgun owners. It's illegal guns. It's illegal guns pouring across the border. That's exactly where they're coming from. It's illegal guns. And so this happens in city after city after city. So this idea that you're going to go after legitimate law-abiding citizens who get a handgun to protect themselves, and you're using this as an opportunity to score political points. I think I'm not trying to put words in his mouth, but I think that's what he's getting at.
But you're giving this person platform to say these words, and he's doing the same thing that you hate that I do to you when we have personal arguments, is impugning your intentions and saying your intention, you meant to hurt my feelings when you did. Like, we don't know what his intentions are. He could legitimately be scared for his school-aged children. We don't know what his intentions are, right? There is gun violence in Canada. We don't know how this will play out statistically. We don't know what his intentions are. Like, this is not like the trucker convoy where we could see that he was refusing to speak to people and giving himself more power all the while. This is not the same thing. And I think you're just letting someone say that he's an opportunist when there is room here to legitimately be afraid of gun violence. And also this idea that, well, most crime happens with, you know, illegal guns. Fine. Why doesn't this get duplicated in countries across Europe where firearms are not allowed? Why do these illegal guns not make their way into European countries and firearms and illegal gun violence happen?
You know, and I don't know. And I don't know the deeper history of Canadian gun violence. But I know that they have no constitutional right to bear arms in the United States. So they don't have that. They don't have that, you know, weighing over them. And you don't have these political divisions that line up this way. I think the argument, it fits into this narrative, though, about Trudeau and this idea that, hey, we'll come and we'll take your bank accounts. We'll curtail personal liberties. We'll make sure that we're forcing you to take jabs in order to drive your trucks across borders, et cetera, and to live your life. And we saw violent crackdowns on these people using guns. This is the hypocrisy part too. You know, it's like they have these violent crackdowns on individuals who are, you know, peaceful protests. We're gonna crack down on you with guns.
Yes.
So it's okay. You know, again, it's okay for them to use the guns, but it's not okay for you to protest your government and the tyranny that they saw from their government. And that's where.
But did they fire upon anybody? They had guns as an intimidation tactic, the same way, you know, police do in many countries around the world, in the airport, where citizens can't have guns, but authorities can.
Well, like President Biden showing up in Texas and surrounded by people with guns at the same time he's saying, you know, you can't use them. You can't have them for protection. He's not saying you can't use them for protection, but making it much more difficult.
I think what this highlights, though, is that Trudeau has an executive power to do something like this. Joe Biden does, too. He won't. Right. And so there is something to be said about playing politics, but at the same time, there also is something to be said about just being incredibly terrified by last week's events and saying, if I don't do something about this and I had the chance to, how will that feel when I didn't protect?
No, I'd love to hear from our Canadian viewers on this. I mean, we don't have to be Canadian to weigh in on a story like this, but I saw plenty of people on Twitter that are saying, hey, wow, you're doing what Joe Biden won't do. And then I saw an equal number of people saying, there goes that dictator, that tyrannical Trudeau once again, taking away personal freedoms. So I'd love to hear what you think about this. Drop us a comment below. Do you agree with David Creighton's point on this? Or do you kind of stand with where the Globe and Mail come down on this in their editorial board? I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on that. Any super chats come in on that question? I wonder if anyone, before we move on, I'm curious if there's any...
No, I didn't see any super chats, but I'm having trouble keeping up with chat because I'm multiple busy today, okay, as opposed to usual where I'm,
yeah,
it's not so relaxed for me.
All right, let me get
no problem. I'm not so relaxed today either.
No, she's not. Sorry, I'm trying to get used to this new Stream Deck
setup. Let's all be not relaxed together.
Okay.
It's so weird. I'm not used to this new Stream Deck setup where I have something in preview mode before I have to cut to it, like a technical director. So I'm like, you know, take camera one, or I'm looking at it, and it's weird for me.
Ready one, take one. Ready two.
I'm going. And I'm like chasing behind you, trying to do the same thing. I found like a couple times you and I are fighting over the preview screen. So I'm trying to follow you guys, and I think you're trying to follow me with camera switches. So we're just looping all over the damn place today.
Yeah, which that's all right.
I kind of predicted from my end that it would be something like that.
All right, I'm gonna get my elements together here. All right, so let's talk about the WHO. Let's talk about the World Health Organization. And I'm going to start it off by giving you some good news here, and I don't want to bury the lead. Africa may have just saved all of us from the tyranny of the World Health Organization, and I'll explain why. We need to all give Africa a standing ovation in a minute, but first, some context on this. Now, you were probably busy taking care of your family this week to notice or care what those rich elites were doing in Geneva, Switzerland. You may have heard stories about these guys, maybe even on our show, where we told you about these guys eating $50 burritos at Davos and in Geneva. Bill Gates talking about passports, you know, for getting that pharmaceutical in your body. And others talking about tracking your every movement. Yeah, that all happened.
We're developing, through technology, an ability for consumers to measure their own carbon footprint. What does that mean? That's, where are they traveling? How are they traveling? What are they eating? What are they consuming on the platform? So, individual carbon footprint tracker.
Now, to a lot of you, it probably sounds like conspiracy theory, something that couldn't possibly happen. A group of billionaires that have no elected power at all, dictating how you and your family should live. But it's not actually a conspiracy at all. Because what actually happened over the past few days will have world-altering consequences for your family and the economic system we currently use. Now, before we get there, let's have a little bit more context. Back in December, this was the headline out of the World Health Organization, their World Health Assembly. It's being led by the United States, essentially, because the United States had a proposal of sorts where basically the United States proposed a change to the World Health Organization treaty. So let me say that again. The United States pushed a change to the current WHO treaty whereby power would be consolidated under the World Health Organization. So like the Biden administration was perfectly fine basically saying, we want to, all of these liberties that we hold dear in the United States, we're going to hand them over to you. You think I'm being hyperbolic here? I'm not. I'm going to go through a few of the points in a second. So of course, all of the other Western powers went along with it and supported it. So all of the health policy and authority would be moved under this umbrella, away from your elected government, your elected officials that you voted for, right? So it's going to be extra governmental. It's going to be extracurricular. Have nothing to do with the people that you elected. And it would take place and go into effect in 2024, just 2 years from now. Probably just in time for another pandemic, because they seem to be really good at predicting the exact dates for these outbreaks. I mean, I'm joking, but not really. They just nailed the monkeypox one, right? They basically told us exactly when we were going to see COVID. So they have a remarkable tendency to know exactly when these things are going to happen. Jump forward to the past few days, and the WHO held its first public meeting on this new treaty, which we have been covering here on this show. Now, we've told you about the hashtag Stop the Treaty, which has emerged all in an effort to not cede government power, the centralized political and economic power that takes away your fundamental human rights of freedom. Now, according to Mary Holland from the Children's Health Defense, among the things that they want are, they want 70% of the world to be vaccinated. They want surveillance to make sure that you're compliant. They want a plan for those rushed jabs, you know, the pharmaceuticals that go in those like little needle things and they stick them with you. I don't want to call them what they are because, you know, that's how what YouTube rolls. So they want to rush those things. They just want to like, hey, we hear about a pandemic. Let's push these things as quickly as possible without the normal stringent trial stages that make sure these things are safe. We've seen how that turns out. Sounds like a great plan. And the main theme of this treaty is called the right to health. I like the sounds of that, especially when unelected billionaires get to tell me what's good for me and my family. So here, take this chemical that we rushed to market. Don't ask any questions about it. Okay, sure, where do I stick it? So again, you may be saying, they're not going to actually do anything. This is all talk. Well, I'm sorry to say that it's actually already begun in a big way. Again, listen to Mary Holland describe how they already made dramatic changes that started back under swine flu. Listen to Mary.
Defined the term pandemic so that it started back with swine flu, that the World Health Organization redefined the term pandemic so that there was a much lower threshold. And they created the Declaration for a Public Health Emergency of International Concern. And that's precisely what happened with swine flu, which we then later unpacked and found that it was completely full of corruption. There'd been lots of money made by pharmaceutical companies. Then we saw the swine flu pandemic. Then we saw Ebola. And then we saw COVID, right? And what happened with COVID is Dr. Tedros, the head of the World Health Organization, he declared a global public health emergency of international concern. And every member country of the World Health Organization had to go along with that pandemic definition, which then required declarations, which put in place liability protection. And now they want to amp up that global public health architecture. That's what this international treaty body is doing right now, which they're telling us will culminate in some kind of new international agreement, which will be effective as of May 2024.
Frightening. I mean, she's right. And so if you dig into that a little bit more, in 2009, the WHO changed the definition of the pandemic away from the severity of the disease to case numbers. I'm going to repeat that. After the swine flu, the WHO changed the definition of a pandemic away from the severity of the disease to case numbers, total case numbers.
So if we all have like indigestion, it could be a pandemic, even though very few people die of indigestion.
Exactly.
Or we could have a pandemic of hangnails and they would all have the same.
I hate hangnails. If I get a hangnail and it gets caught on cotton or something, it really, like that to me, if I had that happening every day.
That's your nails on a chalkboard.
I can't handle that. Yeah, nail, like any piece of a nail getting caught on cotton or something, gives me the heebie-jeebies. Just like my son can't handle the sound of styrofoam crinkling, you know? So I get it.
I don't like velvet.
That to me, I guess under the WHO, it could rise to that level if this
because
is like,
it's case numbers, not severity, even though some people maybe die of hangnails, but it's very undangerous on a normal basis if you keep up with your pedicures.
So they're
I don't know. Don't come at me for this. I don't want to hear anybody's story about it.
Don't come at you, bro. So their definition means it doesn't have to be severe anymore to enact pandemic protocols, lockdowns, tracking, testing, basically flu that hits a number of people would actually trigger these protocols. And of course, who benefits when this happens? Yes, the biopharmaceutical complex, right? 80% of funding for the WHO, comprised of 194 member states, comes from private companies and private foundations, such as the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. The second overall, I guess, guys in the chat room, see if you guys can figure this one out. What's the second largest one? Anybody? Anybody?
Donor? To the World Health Organization.
Yeah, so first is
Bill, the Gates Foundation.
Gates Foundation, okay. No wonder they're always at these meetings, right? So they're always right there telling us how to behave. And letting us know how to dictate our lives.
Yeah.
No, the next is actually Germany. And the United States is the third largest contributor. So you have the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Germany, and the United States. Under these new guidelines, these big pharma companies can rush emergency drugs to the market for you to take them and track everything you do. Again, these changes have already happened, guys. I'm not making this up. It's already in their law. Those changes were small, actually, after swine flu, compared to what they have planned now. Now, the reason that this is incredibly dangerous is because just like all good politics is local, so is health. And so, too, should be our economy, right? So I'm going to go into lockdown here in Camden, Maine, and lose my small business, my small little lobster sandwich shop. I'm just playing up ideas here. Let's say I work in Camden, Maine, right? I have a little bookshop in Camden, Maine. I'm going to have to close up my business so that people in Finland can stop the spread. Like that's what this madness means under these guidelines, right? It's a world rule for how we handle these things. As Catherine Austin Fitz says, quote, the current financial system is centralizing political and economic power in a manner that's draining our or destroying living equity, people, plants, animals, and our natural resources, as well as the financial equity of many people worldwide. And she's right. We're seeing how deadly it is right now with Ukraine. You're being told to pay more for groceries and gasoline because the global Western elites have decided that Ukraine is more important than St. Louis, Missouri. Fall in line, guys. Pay more for everything. Sorry that you don't have baby formula, but Vladimir Zelensky has some new Stinger missiles. Thanks for your tax dollars. And I want to repeat this. This is not a conspiracy theory. Here is Senator Rand Paul last night.
So I'm dead set against this. And they used to call people who talked about one world government. They used to say, oh, it's a conspiracy. We would always say, no, it's in their mission statement. They say it at every meeting. That's what they're for.
Meanwhile, leave it to CNN to jump right to the defense of this idea. Here's the front page of CNN. Take a look at this. Opinion. We need a global pandemic treaty before it's too late, says CNN. Yeah, we absolutely do. We already know how devastating these WHO lockdowns were. But if you needed any more evidence of this, all you need to do is look at the New York Times today and its effects on children. Take a look at this. This is the New York Times, and this is how they put it. Children's learning loss in the pandemic isn't just in reading and math. It's also in social and emotional skills. In a New York Times survey of 362 school counselors across the United States, they said students are behind in abilities to learn, cope, and relate. And this is how Glenn Greenwald says it. A rational defense of lockdown policies would have been, hey, the severe harms they cause are outweighed by the benefits, right? Well, I think we'd have gotten behind that. Instead, it was taboo even to note the harms of COVID policies. Any attempt to argue against maximalist restrictions resulted in accusations of COVID denialism. Thus, you get this, right? Children's learning loss, total destruction. Talk about the emotional setbacks and everything else that we've seen from these children and their ability to learn, to form words. We had a whole meeting with the school last week and talking about the emotional setbacks for the kids. Like almost like 2 years wiped away for these kids.
Yes, especially for the younger ones.
Right.
And the administrators said that they were having a hard time recognizing emotions of their teachers. Like if the teachers were trying to smile at them or trying to give them a look of like, don't do that. They just don't read it as well because they're not used to looking at their maskless teachers.
Yeah. So they're holding public meetings right now, WHO right now, before releasing their final draft in August. And we can write to your elected members of government and tell them, hey, you do not want this. That's exactly what you can do, right? So they're holding these public meetings right now before their final draft in August. And again, you can get on the phone, you can write to your elected members of government, and no matter where you are, because it's not just in the United States, right? It's everywhere. And you can tell them, I do not want this. I do not want to cede my liberty to some faceless, nameless group of individuals behind closed doors who are doing this. This is Catherine Fitz, and she describes it perfectly, how we need to be worried about exactly who these people are.
We'll know about this because what is happening is very quietly a group of unaccountable people are going into a room and coming up with a change in rules that they are going to try and implement an overturning of every constitution and every legal framework in many, many countries around the world. And if that is allowed to happen, literally all the rights and protections we've enjoyed living under the rule of law instead of tyranny by unaccountable forces will lose essentially everything that we've ever enjoyed in the Western world. So this is the end of Western liberty, and it cannot be permitted, and it's going to have a major impact. When the World Economic Forum says it's 2030 and you have no assets and you're happy, What I hear, it's 2030. We've stripped you of your assets and you're mind controlled. And so every person who wants to enjoy property rights and wants to enjoy the liberty to travel, the liberty to speak, this is important to you. This cannot be permitted.
So one of the first decisions that President Biden made when he took office was to rejoin the WHO. Now, earlier this year, the Biden administration came up with 13 amendments for the WHO treaty. According to Soleri.com, these included censorship of anything subjectively deemed misinformation, increased surveillance, seizure of state powers. This is what the Biden administration gave over and allocated to the WHO. Control and allocation of capital in the event of pandemics, real or potential, and financial sanctions to penalize member states that do not comply with the WHO's emergency directives. Now, most of those 12 amendments were vetoed by member countries, but one remained, and that vote was this weekend to move forward with these amendments and to set up the new framework for the new treaty to be voted on in August. So the fight is far from over, but over the weekend, guys, we actually had a victory, a minor one. Maybe it's bigger than it is, but maybe that I'm saying. But let me know in the chat what you think of this. I think it's kind of a minor one because we still have August before the final vote, and this is still the draft stage of all of this. But we did have a victory. You won't see any mainstream media coverage of this anywhere. It's almost impossible to find. Literally, to try to dig and get this information, it's really, really hard to find. Africa, the continent of Africa, stood up and they said no frickin' way. They would not allow this to go forward in its current form. Good for Africa. Now, according to Reuters, these WHO rules are withheld right now. Africa continues to withhold its support. It could block one of the only concrete reforms expected from the meeting, fraying hopes that members will unite on reforms to strengthen the United Nations Health Agency rules as it seeks a central role for itself in a global health policy. Here's how one Twitter follower said, let's see if I can pull this up. Yeah, here it is. The rest of the world owes these African nations a huge debt of gratitude. Thank you, Africa. And just so you know, the U.S., the U.K., and Australia voted in favor of these amendments to take away your freedoms and to cede control to global unelected elites. So what's the Shakira song? Give it up for Africa.
It's time for Africa.
It's time for Africa. Yeah.
Waka, waka, hey.
So there you go. That's where we are right now. I mean, yes. So this weekend, they stood up and they said, we're basically putting a pause on this. And enough people heard about it. Enough people wrote to their members of government and said, no way. We heard from Brazil, Bolsonaro, Brazilian president, who said, no way are we signing this thing. And you had India, you had other countries as well standing by this and saying, no. Africa, the continent of Africa. It's so easy to call it a country. You know,
yes.
Don't make that mistake. It's a continent. So countries in Africa stood up and said, no way. But the United States, the UK,
they're here for it.
They're here. They're here to cede as much of your. You got to really question that, right? Like, wow, they really want to give up all of these different pieces of personal freedom. And when you went through the Biden's 13 amendments that they offered up, it's startling. Personal. I mean, the list was pretty crazy.
Yeah. Without a fight, you know, sure. Take those things.
Yeah.
We don't need them.
We don't need them. You can take all of them. So there you go. WHO, it's on pause at least for a little while. But again, just like the Disinformation Governance Board, it might be back. These world elites don't take these things kindly. So they might do it more nefarious ways. That's why we need to stay on top of these things. That's why we try to bring these stories to you here on this show. So you can be aware about it. You can spread this information. This is not fake news. This is actual news that actually happened. Please share this with someone in your family that needs to know this, needs to hear about this. If you've got somebody in your family that's like, that's just a conspiracy theory. No, it actually happened. So you can send this to them. And don't forget to subscribe and to also like our channel. That would be really powerful as well.
All right, let's go through some super chats. Philip, do you feel prepared to do that, or do you need a second?
Or we can bring them up here if you...
I am super prepared. Okay. Super prepared.
All right.
So, I think. So we got one of them you read out, but let's see. So this one was, complete. What happened?
I don't know it was complete.
So, all right, we've got Gregory Casey with 10 euros. As an Irish and EU citizen, I'm appalled by the sanctions package agreed last night. The fools who purport to govern us are worthy only of the, I can probably say that word if it's a historically context method of French.
Oh, let's not say it then, but yeah.
Yeah, that's what I figured. Okay. But that's, you never know what they're going to go after.
And you then, never know.
HMS Epic Return, you read this one live.
Yes, we got that about gas versus more. Petrol.
Yep. Kuplex, 50 SEK, I can't remember that currency. If guns were the only one issue behind the violence, then please explain why Switzerland does not have a gun problem while also having more guns.
Yes, I don't want to reduce this argument to gun violence or to access to guns, but I think that it's worth talking about how restricting access to guns is a solution, not the solution.
Certainly when we saw those, was the AR-15s? And during the assault weapons ban, I mean, these facts are there, right? So when you remove the assault weapons ban, we saw a huge spike in gun-related violence as a result of that and mass shootings. So those statistics are available to look at. So when you remove that, then that spikes. So again.
Well, one of my favorite little bits from Eddie Izzard, I don't know if you're familiar with him, the stand-up comedian, but he has a bit in his Dress to Kill special from, like, I don't know, it's like early 2000s. But he says, like, goes on to the phrase of, like, guns don't kill people, people kill people. And mm-hmm. he pauses and he's like, well, the gun helps. Yeah. He's like, so.
Right. You know, it's like the guys that go around with the bow and arrow in Norway and, like, you know, they they must really, I think, you know, maybe
what
it
guys?
Takes.
What are you talking about?
No, not the guys. There was like somebody that got shot with a bow and arrow recently. It was like one guy. It was not like a big, you know. Big thing, but it was like that's what they have to go with in Norway. Maybe they break into a Viking museum and get one of those big broadswords.
Okay, let's move on.
Oh, you.
And that was it. That was it for super chats.
Oh, okay, all right. Well, thank you very much for all of those comments, and thanks for your comments in general. And we will continue to look out for them.
We have a website as well. It's redacted.inc. Go to redacted.inc is how you can subscribe and become a member. It's free to become a channel member. You know, we get redacted here on a regular basis. They tend to block us, hide us, do whatever. And so we've set up ourselves on Rumble. So we are made sure we're over on Rumble. But please go to our website, redacted.inc. You can sign up there again for free. And if you'd like to be a supporter of the show, you can do that as well. It's like our version of Patreon. So you can sign up and support for monthly or for the year and support independent journalism. I will mention too, on Rumble, we did release the full interview for free. If you go to rumble.com/redacted, you can watch our full interview with Peter McCullough and John Leake, who authored the new book on COVID. Go watch that whole interview. Peter McCullough is amazing, and John Leake is a great historian, and they came together to write this book on the cover-up from the government and so forth. So go check out that interview that I did with both of them. They were great.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us. We will see you here tomorrow, same time, same place. Bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.